We're going to start with Representative Katz's bill. We've got some amendments and work going on in some of the other bills, and some folks aren't here, so. Welcome to the committee, Representative Katz, and I'll go ahead and move this for Representative Katz. I'm going to move House File 2925 to get it before us. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before you is the Public Facilities Authority on technical changes and kind of the housekeeping bill for them as they're moving forward. And it was in the Finance Committee, but was re-referred here because of the Credit Enhancement Program, which is Sections 13 through 15 in the bill. In taking a look at, you know, the committee's jurisdiction here is looking at should that credit enhancement move up from the 500 million to the $1 billion for total debt obligations.
Okay, so thank you. And I think maybe for folks on the committee, Representative Broad and I have talked about this a couple times and just did again, and members who are on the Finance Committee, was that where it was?
Yeah.
We had the discussion about this bill, and I think it was no one's fault, but at the moment, Representative Broad and I were arguing united that this bill needed to come to taxes so we could take a look at it. I think some of the other folks didn't want to do that, but here it is. And so the committee has a couple options. I think Representative Broad and I first talked about we just delete that section, send the rest of the bill out. I'm now thinking, I think, you know, the committee should, you know, hear a little bit about it. I think it's something we would probably support as a group and let the folks testify on it if they're here. And because the jobs bill has left the tax committee, I don't know where the vehicle is either. So I think there's a number of reasons, and the committee could just decide here, but I think it's okay if we just kind of go forward. I'd like Representative Broad's input on that, but I do then want to ask Mr. Michael just to remind members what the credit enhancement idea is here that we're looking at. It was a tax committee provision when the program began. Representative Broad.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I don't have any problem if you want to ascend it all along. I just think from a management standpoint, it does open the bill up to a number of additional amendment opportunities on the floor with a tax provision in it. So that's, you know, that's up to you guys related to how you want to manage that. But I do think that you probably should expect some tax and attempted additions to the bill on the floor, efforts to make the bill better, a good bill better, on the floor if the tax provisions stay in it.
Representative Broad is so, and it's true, Representative Broad is very helpful in trying to make bills better. As are all the members of this committee, and I do think Representative Kathy need to keep that in mind. So, you know, you can send a note up or think about it. Members can think about it, but I do think we want to understand a little bit what these sections 15, 16, and 17 were in the bill and why Representative Broad and I both thought it should come to taxes. So if we can have Mr. Michael just tell us what this program was before we hear what the change is or how it began. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't remember exactly how many years ago this was enacted, but it was part of a public finance bill that passed as I believe as part of an omnibus tax bill, and it's intended to sort of mirror the practice that's been used with credit enhancement for school districts, and this is a mechanism basically whereby the Public Finance Authority in essence provides sort of an implicit guarantee for these county obligations and school district obligations in the case of school districts, and they found that the effect of that, even though it doesn't have the sort of credit guarantee that would go with a true state general obligation bond, but nevertheless the private market views this enhancement as being a valuable enhancement, and it results in improving the credit quality of those bonds and reducing the interest rates that the local governments pay. And unlike the school district program, if I recall correctly, when it was enacted, had no cap or dollar limit on the amount of obligations that could be essentially enhanced. Whereas the county program, and that's what you've got before you, had a $500 million limit put on it. And I assume since this legislation is here that they're coming up to the point where they're approaching that limit and they want to increase the amount. In thinking about this from a policy perspective, the state is sort of in the position of saying if the primary payers of these bonds are unable or unwilling to pay. I think it's unable. So in other words, if they get to the point where they go in default, the state is sort of saying we will step in and make that up and then recover from the direct obligor on it. So that's the sort of implicit risk. I think everybody thinks that it's a real, real remote risk. But in any case, the private credit markets view this as valuable, and they are willing to accept lower interest rates when bonds have this enhancement that's involved with it.
Okay, so we're focused on just those sections that brought it to taxes, not the other stuff. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jeff Freeman with the Public Facilities Authority. That was a fine description of the program. It began about 10 years ago, I believe, for counties, and then 2 or 3 years ago, it was amended to add cities for, and this is always for very specific things. So for counties, the specific purposes are jails, correctional facilities, law enforcement facilities, social service or human service facilities, solid waste facilities. A few years ago, qualified housing development projects were added. For cities, it's sewer, water, and storm sewer projects, infrastructure capital projects where the city or the county would be issuing general obligation debt backed by the full faith and credit of the city or county. And it's only if, and they're required to use a paying agent and deposit, as they have to make debt service payments, they're required to deposit the funds with the paying agent by 10 days prior to the due date. And if it's not there, then the paying agent notifies us, and we've got a procedure with Department of Management and Budget for if it was ever needed, then the state would step in only to the extent there's money in the general fund, and that's a key thing. It's not a full obligation of the state. It's only to the extent there would be money available in the general fund. The state would step in, make that payment, and then be repaid from the local government either through a property tax levy or a state aid intercept of state funds. We have reached the maximum, the $500 million limit that was originally established. We felt it's, we didn't want to even contemplate the school district route of an unlimited number. We felt that it was appropriate to keep a limit. We set it at $1 billion. Talked with management and budget and Kathy Cardell there, who sits on the Public Facilities Authority Board, about this. And as long as we are making this change, we also thought another appropriate change is in Section 14, that the program be limited to only using it for new projects and not for refunding or refinancing debt from prior projects, which had been allowed up to this point. I think maybe $100 million or so of the $500 has been used for refunding, but we thought that at this point it would be appropriate that if the state's going to provide this backing, there should be the benefit of an actual new project and new construction that it's supporting. So those are the proposed changes.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public would like to speak for or against this bill? If there is, come on down. Otherwise, we're going to go to committee questions. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Michael, thank you for the explanation. I think I followed most of it. But let me ask a couple questions to try to get my head around the risk to the state. Mr. Michael, or to the witness, have there been situations, I'm not aware of any here in Minnesota, but have there been situations in other states where funds like this this sort of state backstop has come into play, and the state's been on the hook, even if only temporarily, for the guarantees provided by these types of loans.
Mr. Freeman,
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not aware specifically of programs like I know there are programs like this in other states. I'm not necessarily aware of the history of how often the payment of the debt service has been used. I know that the municipal default on general obligation bonds is extremely rare. It's never happened in the state of Minnesota. You know, there's a couple of high-profile cases around the country over the past couple of decades, but never in Minnesota. It's extremely rare.
Representative Coles.
Madam Chair, how many of the projects that are being funded through this source are being funded as a first of all, I'm aware that there's far more interest and desire to do some of these projects, probably even the $1 billion would allow for. there's a lot of desire out there. How many of the projects that are being funded are a result of a need to comply with either state or federal regulations, and how many of them are kind of things that communities want to do because they want to upgrade their system or whatever, as opposed to being required to do? And it's really kind of a timing issue. You know, we've got a tough state economically as a state. Our local units of government are struggling. Our citizens across the state are struggling. How many of these things have to be done now because of a state or federal requirement, and how many of these types of projects that are being financed this way are things that communities kind of want to do because they're interested in improving their system as opposed to having to do them?
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, for the county part, I can't really speak to that. That's, we don't deal otherwise with any kind of county facilities. But with respect to the city's sewer, water, storm sewer, Public Facilities Authority provides significant financing every year to cities and other local governments for water infrastructure projects. We follow a priority list that's prepared by the Pollution Control Agency for water for wastewater and stormwater projects. Health Department prepares the priority list for drinking water projects. We don't have sufficient funds to meet all the demand, especially on the wastewater side, where the needs are very significant. So this is a sort of a tool that would be available for projects that either are too low on the priority list for us to help them, or for some other reason the city chooses to finance it more on their own directly in the private market. As to how many are required, I think these are expensive projects, and infrastructure wears out over time, and well-managed cities monitor the condition of the infrastructure periodically, do upgrades, replacements, repairs. I think it's probably safe to say that if there was absolute state requirement, it probably would be a project that would rank high on our priority list, and we'd probably be financing it directly through our revolving loan fund, the low interest loans that the PFA does. So, probably these are projects that are being done by cities because they're needing to maintain that infrastructure. There are projects that they do as part of a well-managed city. I'm not sure that there'd be any that would be absolutely required in a given year. Eventually, it would have to be done, but whether it had to be done this year or next year, that's, the cities manage those decisions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Coles raises a good question, but maybe I can give some comfort. We actually had a bill up in another committee 2 hours ago or testified on some of these issues. If you're actually looking for an agency that has the best example of transparent and objective criteria for what projects should go first for the dollars that we have, I think the PFA is probably the best example of that. The point system they have to figure out who goes first and why, I think, is something that I wish we would adopt for the bonding bill, to be quite honest, and add another bill and not actually the bonding committee. And nobody thought much of it, but gave it a try anyway. I've also, you know, when we're staying up late, can't sleep in this job, I actually looked at the financial statements for the PFA, which is a sad commentary on my life, but I'd say that their situation is actually quite sound, and I appreciate Representative Kath coming forward with the proposal.
Thank you, Representative Garner. Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe it's from listening to Representative Gardner, maybe it's already there. I guess I wondered how you preferred which because we hear of these projects all over the state, and I guess am I missing something, or doesn't this benefit the city who gets chosen hugely because of if they go ahead with it and another city that doesn't get this goes ahead with it, the one that you're involved with would save a lot of money, I would think, on their
Mr. Freeman.
Bonding costs, and I just wondered how we choose the winners and losers on that.
Mr. Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, the programs, the PFA direct financing programs, primarily our Clean Water Revolving Fund and Drinking Water Revolving Fund, the project priority lists for those programs are set by the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department have rules that rank the projects on environmental and public health criteria, and this is done within the context of the federal requirements that those priority lists be in place and some basic framework for that, and then they have specific rules about points for certain things, but it really ties back to environmental and public health factors. For this particular program, what we're talking about, then these are infrastructure maintenance kinds of projects that are still important projects to do, but may not rank high enough because of the direct environmental and public health impacts. But there certainly are important projects to do. Cities are responsible for operating, maintaining this infrastructure, and it requires capital investments.
Okay. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, maybe to be clear, I'll just pick two cities and their water system. Let's say Milroy and Walnut Grove. They're not very far apart, 14 miles, something like that. They both need the same water system, and yet let's say they both are going ahead with it. One gets this, the other one doesn't. Let's say Milroy gets this and Walnut Grove doesn't. Then Milroy would save a lot of money by getting this backing on saving on the bonds, whereas Walnut Grove wouldn't. It would seem like to me. And how do we choose between those two cities that needs it, and isn't one a loser then? Or maybe that's just natural, but
okay.
I'm just trying to get...
And sure. Before you answer, Mr. Freeman, and I want to represent Garner too, I want to remind the committee that we are here in taxes because of Section 15, and we're now on all the other parts of the bill, which is not why it's in taxes. But, okay, Mr. Freeman.
Very quick, Madam Chair, Representative. This program that we're talking about here, this credit enhancement program, there is no priority list. This is... cities apply as they have projects to do. We take those applications, we process them, and we approve them as long as we've got room within the limit, the program limit. Right now, we've stopped taking applications as of last fall, but there is no prior. All cities are eligible for this credit enhancement program.
Okay, Representative Garner. Are you sure, Representative Garner?
Oh, well, since we were talking about debt obligation, I mean, that's sure. Section 15.
Right.
And Representative Coles was also talking about default rates and so on. And maybe Mr. Freeman can just tell us what they require of the cities. This sort of ties in what we had in the hearing before, to make sure that they don't.
Okay. And so, Mr. Freeman, and just to be, in case people weren't tracking what I was saying there, the water revolving fund issues are not in Section 15. What Mr. Freeman's last answer was pertaining to Section 15, which is the credit enhancement program. But I think members are now thinking about all these tools together, so we should answer Representative Gardner's question, I think that would be helpful for members. Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, for the credit enhancement program, we do not do the credit review, the underwriting analysis that we do for the revolving funds when we are making direct financing loans for projects. Cities are issued these bonds under state statutes for local government debt issuance, meeting all those requirements. The part of the application that is submitted is a bond council opinion that cities have to have anyway, and we get that bond council opinion that shows us it's an eligible project under the program and that the debt is being issued legally under state statutes for debt issuance.
Representative Gardner, did that answer your question?
Good.
Okay. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, just to take a second and rave about the PFA, I echo Representative Gardner's comments. Coming from a city that's worked with PFA, my city staff rave about the staff at PFA. It's an extremely well-run program. The requirements are rigorous, people don't question the outcome versus many other things we do here at the legislature. My question for you, Mr. Freeman, is what happens if Section 15 is not changed?
Mr. Freeman.
We then would, as I said, we reached the limit last fall, the $500 million limit. We stopped taking applications. So essentially, the program would be out of business, essentially.
All right. Thank you.
We would not be able to take any new applications.
So, Madam Chair, to follow up, the various communities around the state that are planning to work with PFA to get some of these critical infrastructure needs addressed would...
Madam Chair, I should have sort of followed up on that. So what that would mean is presumably the cities would still go ahead and issue the debt because they have a need for the project, and nobody does the project just because they can get this credit backing. So they would still issue the debt, go ahead with the project, but they would do it based on their own bond rating. They would not have the additional credit enhancement of the provided by the state
Reiner.
Backing, and so they'd be paying a higher interest
right.
cost.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's the point I was trying to go at, and likely especially for smaller communities around the state that may not have the wherewithal to have a higher bond rating and lower interest rates, we'd essentially be passing expense along to these local governments by not allowing them to pool with other local governments around the state and basically have some economies of scale going for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to give the PFA some congratulations on not making the amendment divisible. Well done on that. I was just looking through it because I like parts of it, and I actually like this provision of the bill. I think that the provision that we have here today, Madam Chair, I would liken to conformity. It's kind of conforming with the way that the schools are working. We're moving in the direction of conformity, which is, I think, what this committee likes to do. But my concern, since we're talking about credit enhancement and state guarantee, is more about less about that and more about the creation of a new agency. And so I won't go into the concerns with that part of it today, Madam Chair, but I think that there are some concerns with the bill related to the new staffing requirements and some new agency changes that I think we'll probably have to discuss down the road, but I don't think we need to discuss them here today.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kath, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I fully believe that this bill has been vetted well in the committees that it's traveled through, and any of those concerns over staffing and the use of the funds, I think, are well within the parameter of what the PFA is trying to set up, as well as what bond council is trying to say, that we have to uphold bondholder covenants, and if we don't have these things in place, we're not able to do that. The provision that you guys are looking at today really is critical for our small communities to make sure that they have this credit enhancement program. It's going to save millions of dollars for our smaller communities. And so I'd like to see these sections, 13 through 15, stay in here, move forward. And if there's no way to work out with both sides of the aisle on how to make sure that this bill moves forward with that intact, then I guess we'll have to remove it. But it is my wish right now that it would stay in there and that it would create a whole bill that's going to help our communities.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman, I just want to ask, just thinking about this. So I'm in the a very fortunate situation. My city has a bond rating that I believe only 12 cities in the country have. I mean, the best you can get from everybody. Is this program probably going to help more folks who are going to look at this and go, geez, they're smaller communities or folks who maybe don't have the wherewithal who are going to look at this program and say, we'll get a better deal for the taxpayers if we go apply for credit enhancement? And would other cities like mine say, you know, there's really not a net win for us here and we'll just stay out of it? I mean, I'm trying to understand if this does help those more disadvantaged a little more than some of the other cities that don't need it as much. Mr. Freeman?
Madam Chair, that is exactly correct. Okay. It's only the generally smaller, but okay. The communities with lower bond ratings, or a lot of communities don't have a bond rating. They're considered unrated. Okay. And so this program benefits those communities.
I didn't know that all communities weren't rated. It's very interesting. Okay, Representative Dabney?
Pass, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, further discussion? If not, further discussion, we're going to take the vote to the motion is to send the bill, pass the bill, and send it to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The bill is passed, and you're off to the floor. Thank you, Representative Kath. And we actually have, we're going to go to the next author, which is Representative Haas. He's been here the whole time. And I do want to tell members there is another bill that is not on the calendar that we're going to hear, and it's Representative Torkelson's. And I'll explain about that when we get to it, but we're going to hear Representative Haas now. So we want to get through these three bills remaining before we have to get off to our next meetings today. Welcome, Representative Haas.
Thank you. And do you have to move the bill, or are you just hearing the bill, or how are you doing that, Madam
Chair? We want to move it. Would Representative Marker, would you move the bill, and then he's got an author's amendment, too.
I will do that, so move. House File 3658.
Okay, so Representative Marquardt moves House File 3658, and then Representative Marquardt moves House the H3658A1 amendment.
So move.
To get it in the form the author would like it. Discussion of the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Okay, so now we've got it how you want it. Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. Under normal years where everybody wasn't so stressed financially, we would be in here with a simpler request, and that would be to waiver a sales tax for this facility. And that has been done in the past and for some other facilities in the past. And knowing that we can't do that right now, we have a bill that says collect it and then reimburse it back through. And with the correct acronym be REIT, R-E-I-T.
REIT.
I don't know what that is, but I'm sure your staff does.
Representative Haas, I'm just...
But if it's got some money in it, I want it.
Representative Haas, you know what? This is a good time, and I want to thank you, and I want to thank Representative Welty. No, who else do we have here? Representative Torkelson and Falk, who are all paying for their bills in this way. I think Representative Torkelson has another way. But REIT... We'll have Mr. Michael remind everyone what that is again, because these authors have met the test and they're paying for their bills. So REIT is one of the provisions out there. And so, Mr. Michael, will you remind everybody what REIT is, because it's paying for a couple bills here today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, REITs are a federal tax instrument that allows real estate investments to be taxed on a pass-through basis, so there's no entity-level tax on the corporation which owns real estate, and it's required in order to qualify that it pay, I think, 95% of its income out to its shareholders. Under normal circumstances, for an individual shareholder, for example, that means that the dividends and distributions get passed through to them and they get taxed on their individual return. At the federal level, for corporations, C corporations that own REITs, they are not allowed what's called the dividend received deduction, which normally allows a corporation to deduct 80% of the dividends that they receive from other corporations. That rule does not apply to REIT dividends. Minnesota has generally followed the federal dividend received deduction rules, but has not followed that one. This provision would conform to that and deny the Minnesota dividend received deduction to those REIT dividends received by C corporations. So this affects C corporations that received REIT dividends, and they would lose their current 80% deduction.
Okay, and members will recall, this is originally how the governor was looking at paying for the angel investor credit, so we found out it didn't raise $10 million a year, it raised less than one. So
with
members
are familiar with that. I had flashbacks to an integral calculus. I felt about the same in there also. So.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you, Representative Haas.
Madam Chair.
Anyway, this is really important to this little cluster of cities, showing its importance. And back in the audience, I have Bill McCabe from St. Augusta, Judy Wyron, St. Joe, Russ Olson, Sauk Rapids, Michael Williams, all city administrators, and I have testifiers here today of Mayor Dave Kleiss and Patty Gartland, Sartell, and Shauna Johnson of Waite Park. As everybody is, these cities are up against it financially, and they're also up against it because they can't develop either because they need new water capacity. I would remind the cities involved, if this starts to move forward, that there is also other exemptions already on the books for water treatment plants so that you can actually be relieved of the tax for some of the equipment and from the installation of that equipment within that facility. I didn't want to have that go unsaid because I think it's significant to remember that, and sometimes that gets bypassed. With that, I will have the testifiers introduce themselves and give testimony, if that's all right with you, Madam Chair.
Yes, please. Former Senator Kleiss, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Madam Chair.
The legislature changes fast, doesn't it? So for folks who don't know former Senator Kleiss, here he is, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Kleiss, Mayor of the City of St. Cloud, and we're here together with all the city administrators from all the cities, so there's a lot of smart people to answer all your questions here that are here with me. But this is a project that our original plant was built and actually operation in 1976 when I was 11 years old. And that building was designed to last for about 20 years. And it's lasted obviously a lot longer than that, 14 years. So this is an upgrade that's needed for the facility itself, but it's also a capacity increase of about 4.9 million gallons per day will be the capacity increase. But the significant part of it is just to upgrade to meet the state and federal standards on phosphorus discharge and other pollutants that we have to meet. So that's why we're going forward with this. This facility is operated and owned by the City of St. Cloud, but contractually in agreement with six area cities that operates this facility and have for a number of years. So we've come forward and we have the cities here. Today this is a $43.5 million expansion that we want to start this year. And it is, again, needed for the capacity, needed for to meet the federal and state guidelines, and also needed to meet a building that has already extended its life 14 years beyond what was originally anticipated doing, and we're keeping it together, but it needs to be upgraded. And we've done this in a joint effort in all the area cities, and I want to turn this over to, and again, this is the sales tax exemption. We're here to support this bill, and we'd prefer to have this sales tax exemption on all projects that cities do around the state, but I know the financial times are tough, but in this particular project, this is truly a regional effort that is a tremendous need in our area. So I want to turn it over to the chair of the group that puts this all together, and that's the city administrator for the city of Sartell, Patty Gartland.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the commission, I'm very pleased to be here. I'm Patty Gartland. I'm the Sartell City Administrator. As Mayor Kleiss indicated, I've also had the pleasure of serving as the chair of the St. Cloud Area Wastewater Advisory Commission for the last several years. This is a commission that was actually created in 2001 to help foster transparency and understanding between the City of St. Cloud as owner of the plant and the contract cities who were significant clients and investors in the plant and the operations. And I think that committee has been very successful in doing that. For about the last 5 years, we've been devoting a lot of our time and attention to the necessary upgrade to the plant and expansion to the plant, which has really brought us to this point. And it's a pretty significant undertaking when you talk about six cities, 33 elected officials, gaggles of engineers and administrators and the like, all coming together to come to an agreement on what we need to do and how we need to pay for that. And the city of Sartell is second in highest investment, only behind the owner of the plant, St. Cloud. We are looking at over $12 million as our share of this upgrade and expansion. So our area cities are all ready to move forward with this. We We know that this, beyond the upgrade aspect of it, is critical to being able to accommodate additional growth and development, particularly for Sartell and Sauk Rapids. Our allocations in the current plant are nearly deplete. We are positioned well to continue accommodating growth in Sartell along that Highway 15 corridor. It has lots of potential for additional tax growth for not only our local communities but the state of Minnesota also. But we need this plant expansion to be able to accommodate that. We see this project as, and the sales tax exemption as, kind of the state's partnership opportunity with us to help continue to grow that, be able to accommodate economic growth and development and job growth and development. So I am here to offer on behalf of our collective cluster of cities our advocacy and to hopefully help you understand how critical this sales tax exemption is to this important project.
Thank you, Ms. Gartland. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shauna Johnson, and I am the city administrator for the city of Waite Park. Just a couple things that I wanted to add, not repeating a lot of what's already been said. One thing here, we're here for just the sales tax exemption. We're not looking or seeking bonding funds. So I think that the efforts of our communities to look at the financing of this are important to highlight as well. I kind of bring a little bit of a different perspective from the standpoint that our city is one of those that doesn't have some of the capacity issues that some of the other ones do. We do, however, recognize the importance of this regional plant and recognize that in the future we will need to look at this. One of the other things that's facing our communities along with the upgrade and rehab of the plant is actually the rehab of our sanitary interceptor system. This is all of the pipes and things that are in the ground. From the city of Waite Park's perspective, we're facing $7 million of additional costs associated with upgrading those things within our community. In addition to the $4 million, which is our share of the plant expansion, we see a real concern, and our council actually expressed a concern with moving forward with this project. If we were looking at it from our own individual city's perspective, we probably would have delayed it. However, looking at it from a regional perspective and looking at it from the needs of everybody regionally, it was something that needed to be moved forward today. So from my city's perspective and some of the others in the audience, the sales tax exemption is a huge part for us to be able to help minimize some of those expenses for our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson, and thanks to others who are here. Did anyone else want to testify for or against this bill? Okay, questions from committee members? Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, I'm looking at the revenue note. I just want to make sure I understand this. We're applying the, or we're eliminating the ability to deduct REIT dividends across state, right? I mean, this isn't just regionalized to the St. Cloud area, I assume.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, yes, this would apply to all C corporations in Minnesota.
And Madam Chair, maybe just more of a comment. First of all, Mayor Kleiss, I agree with what you said at the outset that from a policy perspective, it probably doesn't make sense for us to be requiring local units of government to pay the sales tax. I've been a long-time proponent of getting rid of that. Obviously, the state relies on a lot of that revenue now, and we got to fix that going forward. I guess and I don't have any qualms about the project that you're proposing. I understand the regional nature of it. I understand the need for it. I guess the comment or the concern is, you know, if we're going to pay for the sales tax exemption by getting rid of the REIT deduction, and we're going to pay for that for the St. Cloud area, why aren't we going to do it for the needs in Wilmer or Worthington or Rochester or wherever else there may be a similar regional need? I mean, that's really the policy issue for us is we are going to be getting rid of a deduction that's available right now to C-Corps across the state, regardless of where their property that they're investing in may exist. and we're going to use those. We're going to use the savings that the state gets by not allowing that deduction to potentially offset the sales tax that we would otherwise collect for this project. Again, I agree with the premise we should get rid of the sales tax for local units of government. I don't have any problems with the project, but I mean, is there a reason that we should pick this project to apply this financing mechanism for? In other words, the chair has talked about, you know, if we're going to come forward with an idea here in the tax committee, we've got to pay for it. Representative Haas, you're paying for it. Congratulations, good work. But when Duluth comes to us and has a project, you know, why wouldn't Representative Reinert use this same funding mechanism? And well, Representative Haas has already has beaten him to the punch. Is there a reason, a policy reason, that we should do this as opposed to some of the other needs?
Representative Coles, before they answer, I will tell you that, you know, I think it's unfair to pin this on them. I mean, pin it on me, I guess, what I'd say. And that is because in the past, in the first 2 years I was chair, we let everybody under the sun bring every bill forward that cost money. We didn't make anyone pay for it. And now this last year and this year, we've said, you know what, people need to pay for them. Now, in the end, will this bill pass alone? It would have to go in the omnibus tax bill. This committee would decide how we would pay for any spending items in the bill. So you're right to say there's not a link here. You know, similarly, for example, the PCR amendment last night, that's, you know, people who would contribute, they would get to pay for the jobs for the angels. You know, is that the right connect? You know, I mean, I actually had a different proposal and thought it would come from high income for high income. But the PCR could make that, you know, same exact argument on the amendment on the jobs bill. But I would say that I think what it expresses is there are folks who are willing as authors to say, I understand that when I carry a bill, it's going to cost the state fund something, and I'm willing to say I would support revenue for it. Now, you know, so I've sort of put people in this awkward situation. I think we have a number of authors in both parties who are using REIT because of the, really the reason is because the governor signaled that he was okay with that, and that was going to pay for the angels. So it's kind of got that $1 million left under there. And so, you know, I just don't think it, you know, former Senator Kleist or Representative Haas really can own that one, but I'll let them answer. I think people are trying to figure out how to get over the hurdle to get a hearing. Doesn't mean we're going to pass it. I think everyone understands that we may or may not. It's just to get a hearing to sort of ante up that you're willing to kind of put your neck out there and pay for your bill.
Sure. And Madam Chair, just a quick comment for Mayor Kleist. Just to be clear, I'm not even questioning the or suggesting that the policy choice that Representative Haas is talking about here to get rid of the deduction is a bad idea either. I mean, I could probably support that. I want to think about it some more, but I think I could probably support that. So, okay, so we're tying these two together. Maybe that's not fair, but I know Mayor Kleist had a comment.
Haas. And Mayor Kleist.
I'm going to let the testifier speak. Well, I think, and you know, I understand the difficult situation. I, 11 years I served here, we many times had to do that, to follow rules to bring bills up, to find pots of money to do that. We're here again for an exemption. Again, philosophically, it makes sense to do it all. I know that's not within the purview of the state's budget, the situation we're in now, but that would make the most sense. But if it makes you feel any easier, I mean, if you look at a region here again, I think as mentioned by the, you know, this is again six cities, it's a large region. We are a donor region. We contribute, as you know, you look at sales tax, $110 million. The cities alone here, $110 million that go to the state. There are more dollars in sales tax generated in this region than come back. And you could add up all the LGA, whatever is left of that, and you could add up everything else, and we're a donor region. So if you look at it from a state perspective, and this is part of economic development. Right now, you've got cities that are at their capacity. If the capacity is not increased, you're not going to have more businesses. You're not going to have more dollars flowing into the state. And that's what's going to end up in that. So from a policy perspective, I think in that respect, again, I'm not saying where you should bring these dollars. I mean, you're going to have to make the decision how you weigh that out. But I'm just talking from an area. And, I, you know, the times that I've served down here, it's very rare that you have 33 elected officials in you know, six different jurisdictions and counties actually come together with a project. In some of these cities, it's a very, very challenging requirement to increase their rates by, in some cases, 30-some percent in order to do this. So these folks have taken some really tough in to come together and do this on a for a region, even though it doesn't necessarily benefit Wake Park right now or St. Cloud. It benefits the region. So I think you have to weigh all of those things, and again, we're not, you know, where you're taking dollars from, but from a perspective of where this region is contributing and the sales tax helped the rest of the state with a lot of issues, and I could have the same argument with the airport fund that just kind of disappeared and went to help balance the budget. There, you know, there's all kinds of issues around that, that, you know, you have to make those choices.
I'm fortunately not in your seats anymore to make those choices, but I can kind of hear it strongly. Yeah.
And yours is comfortable?
Ours is not comfortable either. Since I have the floor, this is the we cut 20% of our budget in 2 years, and we're down 15% of our workforce right now. And we're looking at more significant changes in that respect. So we're in the same boat. So it's a matter of helping us all together to make the state a better place.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Sure. And we have five more questions for you, two more bills. Sure. Representative Hawes.
I would just like to add that the cities are coming together, and they're really in shaky shape here. And costs are going up, and they're in there with an awful lot of courage. And any help that we could give through that process would be very helpful to them. It would be easy for a few of them to scatter, and then this wouldn't work. You know, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just out of curiosity, I know one of the testifiers mentioned that you were not seeking bond, you know, you're not seeking bonds for this, but was this in the bonding request? I know you had a number of projects vetoed, but was this one of
this
those
was,
projects?
This was not
Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For all of those who drink everything that you're flushing, I hope your project gets done.
or we're downriver, right?
Right, right. And my... we'll save the rest of that for another committee. But, Madam Chair, this is a question really for this committee. After this lengthy discussion we had last night, and we heard from the Revenue Commissioner that the governor won't sign your great idea to speed up federal conformity where we're limiting deductions on high-income earners to pay for angel investor tax credit, where we're essentially conforming with federal law. But he will sign this, which, according to the bill summary, disallows the deduction of dividends from a real estate investment trust if not considered a dividend under the IRS Internal Revenue Code. So using the same logic that Commissioner Ioannis used with us yesterday, that it was a de facto income tax increase, why is this not a de facto business tax increase? Because we're conforming with the federal tax code. And that's just a logical, rhetorical question. I'm sure we could talk for hours about that, but I'm still a little turked off about that whole discussion last night, and I've said my piece, and I'm done.
I appreciate that, Representative Gardner. I don't see the difference, but that's just me. Representative Downey, Reinert, Broad, Marquardt, and then we wanted to finish this bill and go to another couple. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if they – was it in any of the governor's bills to use the REIT? Was it in the... Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I just couldn't remember. I know there were discussions, but I wasn't sure if we were fairly accusing the governor of that. Thank you. Madam Chair, a question actually for you. Is there precedent for giving one-off sales tax exemptions on kind of a project basis? Is that something that happens with some regularity here, or is this just out of the norm entirely?
Representative Downey, I want to correct the silent record because that was, you know, you can't hear heads nodding on tapes, but, you know, I don't think it was in your bill. So I don't think you have to own that, but we can check on that. I think why people say this, honestly, is because the commissioner repeatedly in working with the angel advocates said this was the solution and this would be what the governor would sign. You know, I don't know that he's ever put that in print, so we'll give the governor the option to come and say, you know, nope, I would have never done that, but I think it's kind of widely understood that that was what the governor was okay with. But we can certainly have the commissioner in a future meeting when he's here, you know, rebut that. But I don't want you to own that in a bill if it really wasn't in there. We can check that. So, yeah, it's, you know.
Remember.
Well, and Representative Downey, I mean, I think you were carrying some language for the governor when you put some bills in this year. So it may or may not have. And we probably should check on that, and just so we know. So we don't want to put you in a tough spot there. And so your real question was about, do we ever kind of pick and choose folks who get the sales tax exemptions? You know, this committee's tried not to. We did have 1 year. Representative Broad worked a lot on this issue on kind of, you know, all of them. Representative Liebling has carried bills, as has Representative Coles and others, to have no sales taxes at all paid by cities and counties, because it's sort of a double tax that the taxpayers just absorb anyhow. I think that's what Representative Coles was talking about. Representative Liebling's promoted that. But, you know, occasionally things, yeah, they do get through, particularly with new projects that are for, you know, some big thing like let's build the Twin Stadium, you know, and then they don't pay sales tax on their materials. So yeah, they do get through for some big projects occasionally. Probably not the best policy, but Representative Downey.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I honestly just didn't know what the history was and wasn't sure if this was totally out of the ordinary or very commonplace.
You know, Ms. Dalton is the one who could really give, you know, a lot of information on Ms. Dalton on sales taxes, and you know, maybe she can work with you after, but there are times that we have let folks have sales tax exemptions. But I should say the Senate's a big fan of these. They put them in every year. A bunch of different legislators get riddled sales tax exemptions. We usually kill them in the House, but Representative Haas.
Madam Chair, I don't know if we should refer to these things as gaggles or fleets, but if you look back in your history, there is a ton of projects, and I have been here not as a representative, but I have been here with projects that I have had sales tax release. I think it's a fleet, if I remember our lecture on the floor yesterday. So,
Ms. Dalton, Representative Downey is curious as to how often we give out sales tax exemptions for different good projects like these wastewater or other things like twins, and just kind of a history, and there's been a bunch of them. But
Madam Chair, if you actually look in the sales tax law, which was recodified in 2001, there's been 27 that were either in construction exemptions that were either in effect since 2001 or were enacted after 2001. There were more than that before them. I can't tell you exactly how many have been for wastewater treatment facilities. I know there's been at least one. But the problem is all of these tend to have sunset dates, so when they sunset, they expire, and I can't go back and look and see which ones were for what.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Reinert. Brad Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the essence of time, I'll ask the question, but look for information at some other time. I'm curious as to how the responsibility was divvied up amongst the various communities and what the impact on individual sewer rates will be. And, again, I can get that information from Representative Haas another time.
Thank you. Appreciate you getting that with working with Mr. Representative Reinert. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just thinking about Representative Gardner. Oh, he left. He keeps coming up with new words for conformity, and I think maybe now it's quick take conformity that we should be talking about. But you know, I'm just curious from the mayor. I think you make a really good point that you know, you're actually paying more out than you're getting in, and I'm just curious, and you don't have to do it today, but I would love to get some information related to how much you pay in sales taxes, and then I can kind of compare it to the LGA piece, because I think that there's a relationship opportunity for us in terms of the local government and state relationship that we keep missing in the full picture, and I think you bring that to the table in a very good fashion. I'd love to have that information. If you could get it to me, that'd be great.
Madam
Mr. Mayor, please.
I can get you all that information very detailed, but the city of St. Cloud itself sends to the state $55 million every year. The region, the area of six cities, $110 million every year. If you want to translate into LGA, we receive, well, we don't know what we're going to receive this year, but but it's about $10 million, so it's far less than that. We have about 20%, the city of St. Cloud itself, if you also look at the property tax, and again, where we're paying all these things, 20% of our property in the city of St. Cloud is tax exempt, primarily state, federal, and nonprofit. What we consider our second largest city, which is St. Cloud State University. If it was a city, it'd be the 52nd largest city in the state and the second largest city in our region. But we do send a lot of sales tax to the city.
And I hear that, you know, there's a building in my city that is the third largest city in the state of Minnesota, and it's all in one building every single day.
We would gladly take that in a heartbeat.
There's more people in there that live in my whole city every weekend, every Saturday and Sunday, so I understand that, and we'd love to show you the sales tax numbers of what that building is generating for the state. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just think that as we look at this relationship, this is a really key point that we should be considering when we talk about local government aid, market value homestead credit. You know, we're taking money from cities around the state, and then doling it out somewhere else. And it seems to me that there might be an opportunity to focus those LGA dollars on maybe some smaller communities that aren't paying so much in sales taxes, and allowing those big communities who are paying a lot in sales taxes maybe to keep those dollars in one pocket versus the other. So I just think it's an interesting opportunity for us to be thinking about. I've asked Pat Dalton to do some research for me, but I just wanted to let the committee know I'll be kind of trying to assess the overlay between those two things.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And just wondering, the six cities are going together on a regional wastewater treatment facility, or have. Do you cooperate in other services like law enforcement or public works?
We cooperate on a number of services, and we're hopeful to even cooperate even more on, but we cooperate in pretty much every aspect in some form or the other. In fact, not only with the area cities, but counties. We do a number of our law enforcement, our dispatch. In fact, the city of St. Cloud is all done through the county, as it is with some of the other cities. So we cooperate not only, we're unique in St. Cloud because we're in three counties. So we cooperate with the counties and the cities on a number of things. We continually talk about, in fact, we get together as an area cities group on a quarterly basis. In fact, next week we'll be get together and actually discussing those very things about ways that we can cooperate even more on those areas, especially the big ticket items, of public safety being the highest cost of all of our cities. Public safety.
Madam Chair. How many, do all six cities have a police department, or does the county contract out? Or they contract out with the county?
Mr. Mayor?
Well, five of the cities have a police department. St. Augusta contracts out with Stearns County.
And Madam Chair, are there five police chiefs?
There are. You're in a position that I would love to see just one, but that's an issue, or some type of hybrid police force, such as the case in Manhattan, Kansas. We're continuing those discussions. We're doing everything, you know, in the areas that we can around that, especially when it comes to technology and redeploying. But that type of scenario, I would love to see.
Madam Chair and Mayor Kleistein, you mentioned you had to reduce your workforce by 15%. I don't know how many of that came out of the police department or public works, but I'm just thinking, and you know, we're looking at redesign type of things. If you were all together, you could maybe reduce that through attrition rather than actually having, if you had a larger pool. So that's for another day, but we,
Madam Chair, our 15% is through attrition. We've lost 15% of our workforce without laying anybody off, and that comes from all departments. I haven't laid anyone off in the city of St. Cloud, but we're down 15% through attrition.
Thank you very much for being here. It's a difficult issue. We know you got a tough situation there. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you all for coming. Representative Falk. And again, I want to remind members, Representative Torkelson has a bill, and it's not on the calendar because everything was already printed for this committee. We posted it at 9:30 today, but it's very similar to Representative Falk. So he's going kind of statewide. Representative Falk's doing a smaller thing, so we wanted to hear them together today. Representative Falk, could Representative Hillstrom, I don't have the number, it's 2592?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom moves House Bill 2592. And I think Representative Hillstrom, Representative Falk has the DE1 amendment.
I'll move that as well, Madam.
So Representative Hillstrom now moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like it. Discussion of the amendment or not discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. The amendment's adopted. Representative Falk, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hillstrom, for putting the bill in the shape that the author would intend. This is an exemption to the sales tax for the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response, or ARMA, radio system. And originally it was brought to me by a number of my county commissioners. When they're being forced to upgrade to this emergency radio system, they have to pay the sales tax on it. The reason why that they feel that was somewhat unfair is that there were sales tax exemptions granted for phases 1, 2, and part of phase 3 of the project, as I understand it, which includes the 7 county metropolitan area, plus Chisago and Isani counties, and parts of Benton, Sherburne, Stearns, and Wright, and Itasca counties. And so basically what we're looking to do is expand this sales tax exemption statewide to make it fair for everyone. And the way we've structured this is to use the same mechanism to pay for it that Representative House did. That's through the Real Estate Investment Trust and making the adjustments there. And the way this would work is that counties would have to buy the equipment, but they would be able to request to have the sales tax paid back from a fund, and no more than $1 million could be expended from that fund each year. And I believe that the total cost of the program for the, if it were to go statewide, would be, I think, about $7 million, between 7 and 8. I'd have to double-check that, but just going off of memory, that it would take a number of years to get this paid back, but the counties would be able to get some relief, and it would be just a matter of who's able to apply and how quickly this is done and then get that sales tax exemption. So I would be happy to entertain any questions that people do have.
And Representative Falk, I misunderstood, because I thought you were doing some counties. You are doing the whole state, as is Representative Torkelson. I had been told that you had a few counties.
No,
so you're doing the whole state. Okay, great. Thanks. Questions for Representative Falk? Public testimony for or against this bill? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually, I'll leave Representative Falk off the hook for a moment. Question for staff instead. I'm not understanding the language in the bill related to how the refund interacts with the legacy amendment. And I'm wondering if Ms. Dalton can assist me.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, what the bill does is normally if there is a refund, the legacy, the refund of the 3/8 percent sales tax from the legacy bill would come out of that dedicated fund. And to get this to actually a zero cost on the revenue estimate, we this bill basically pays the refund for the legacy portion of the tax, the 3/8 tax, out of the general fund, as well as paying the sales tax refund on the general, on the regular sales tax.
Representative Dabney?
Boy, that was really complicated.
And you know, Representative
Dabney, I didn't get enough sleep last.
This is an issue going forward when folks thought it was a good idea to do that 3/8 thing, and all of us thought that, and then the voters did it. You know, now we're forever having to do conforming amendments on issues whenever people are doing things in sales tax. I think we still haven't done cigarettes. It's still not lined up on the 3/8 sales tax. So, Ms. Dalton?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if you'd like, I've got a couple of bills related to tobacco. If you'd like to bring them forward, we could entertain amendments.
Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think maybe it would help if I pointed out that the constitutional amendment allowed a change in the rate of that dedicated 3/8 tax as the tax base either expands or contracts, mm-hmm. but it only allows it to change by 0.001% at a time. So if this isn't, if the loss to the fund or the gain to the fund is not enough to cause the rate to change that much, essentially you're going to short that fund. And this would only have shorted the fund $50,000, which is not enough to change the rate, to increase the 3/8 rate. So basically you either would have had to short the natural resource dedicated fund by $50,000 a year, or you have to make the refund payment out of the general fund, and that's what this bill does.
Madam Chair, I'm getting
Danny?
You know, global warming, icebergs are thawing. I'm starting to get this slowly. I'll do my best Representative Cole's impression. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about this yet. you know, I'm willing to think about it. But I guess there is a question about the language on the legacy amendment is about support. I can't do it. Somebody
supplant.
Help me.
Supplanting.
It cannot supplant, that those funds cannot supplant existing funds. And yet, aren't we in essence supplanting those funds with general fund the way Representative Falk's bill is structured? Because we're taking general fund money and we're holding the legacy fund whole, so we're, rather than taking their percentage off, we're doing the opposite.
Ms. Dalton.
I told you I didn't understand that.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, as Mr. Michael said, we're doing the opposite. We are basically adding more general fund money to cover those. We are not reducing the standard general fund payments for natural resource purposes.
This is what happens when the tax committees don't write these bills.
Right.
The 3/8 Amendment crowd wrote these bills.
What she said is what I meant to say, is we're taking general fund money, in essence, we're taking general fund money and shifting it into the legacy amendment.
Yes.
Which is what I understood, regardless of what I said, that's what I understood and what I meant.
How do you feel about it?
I'll have to think about it for a while, Representative Coles. But I think that's a question for the committee about the appropriate use of the general fund versus that fund. It kind of reminds me of under the Ventura administration when we were taking general fund money and putting it into transportation projects. And I'm not going to try to go there any deeper than that because I couldn't get the legacy fund conversation right. But, I think this is a question for us to struggle with, independent of this bill.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate Representative Dabney's comments, too. But mechanically, as this works, too, that money, the sales tax, the dedicated funding is being paid. And as the counties are able to apply for refunds over a number of years, I mean, you're getting paid back that money as well. But it isn't depriving the legacy dollars of money. I mean, but the general fund is being reduced by that small portionality. It's one of the things that my county's asked me for because we are forcing them to upgrade to the system, which even in many rural parts of the state, we do not believe it's going to work as well as it has been promised to work. But we're trying to give some relief because we are forced with this mandate.
Thank you. Public testimony for or against this bill. Further discussion on this bill. We're going to lay over House File 2592 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Falk. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And Representative Loon, would you move? I think it was posted that way, but we've got it. We've got possession, so I'm just going to move it. It's House File 2779.
Yes, I'd be happy to move that, Madam Chair.
Okay, so Representative Loon moves House File 2779, and Representative Loon, Representative Torkelson also has a DE1 amendment.
So I would move the DE1 amendment as well.
Okay, so Representative Loon moves the DE1 amendment for Representative Torkelson's bill. Discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. The bill is in the order you would like it. Representative Torkelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for accommodating me on such short notice. And thank you to your staff who duplicated things on very short notice also. I appreciate all those actions very much. As it turns out, my bill is, as far as its effect on the radio system, will be identical to Representative Falk's bill. My understanding was his was limited to a few counties, and his original bill was, but his amendment that I was unaware of expanded to the entire state. What's different about our two bills is the funding mechanism. I am using the PCR approach where these communities would pay the sales tax but then have it refunded as the PCR comes back online after the unallotment runs out. As far as the need for this, we could spend quite a bit of time discussing that, and I have a number of people here that would speak in favor of extending this exemption throughout the state. Currently, there are 25 counties in the state that are exempt from paying sales tax on this type of equipment. They are generally the metro counties, Southeast and St. Cloud, and there are 62 counties across the state that will pay the sales tax unless something changes. As was alluded to earlier, the extension of the armor system throughout the state is an important public safety effort, and making this more affordable for rural counties is certainly, to me, the fair and correct thing to do. The issue really is how do we possibly fund this? This PCR approach is one approach that is a potential one. The other thing that's been mentioned in recent conversations is there's a fire safety fund that's been proposed, a dedicated account that has been looked at as going to the general budget, and perhaps using that fund that's being accessed might be an appropriate expenditure for those funds rather than just putting them into the general fund. But that is not part of my bill. My bill looks at the PCR funds and utilizing those to pay for these sales tax refunds.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And we had the long debate on the PCR mechanism funding, and we could all rehash it, but I don't think we need to. We understand what you're doing there. And again, this is another author who's just finding a way to pay for his bill to get here. So, we don't really want to spend too much time on that, but we do want to talk about the, you know, the good work on trying to help the radio. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that there also is another funding source that nobody has talked about yet. ARMR actually has the ability to raise revenue. I believe there's a 10-cent fee that has not been charged, or maybe that's the expansion of the 911. I get the two mixed up, but the board that has the ability to do that has chosen not to do it, and funding would have been made available to local units of government to do some of these upgrades had that group chosen to raise this fee, which they have not. So, Madam Chair, I just wanted you to know that there is a revenue source out there that no one's been talking about just yet.
Representative Hillstrom, who are those people? And well, what are their phone numbers?
Scott Wiggins is up in the audience, okay. Madam Chair, and he can probably clarify whether the fee is the 911 or the expanded ARM. You know, again, I get the funds mixed up, but okay. I've carried this legislation to authorize them to raise the revenue, and they have chosen not to, despite my request.
Okay. Well, good to know. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Scott Wiggins. I'm the Director of the Division of Emergency Communication Networks at the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. I have three programs under my area of jurisdiction, the ARMR program, the 911 program, and the state's interoperability program. And while I thank Representative Hillstrom for having carried our legislation, it's not entirely accurate, you know, what you've stated here. We do have the authority to raise the 911 fee for the construction of the ARMR backbone system. We did raise the fee last July. We did raise it 10 cents. Those funds are bond proceeds that go to the actual construction of the ARMR backbone. Those bond proceeds have never been intended for local enhancements to the system. They're just for the construction and operation of the ARMR backbone. And then a couple of other clarifying comments, if I may, Madam Chair, and that is that ARMR and migration to the ARMR radio system is 100% optional by local units of government. It is not mandated in any way. Today, we stand at 69 counties in the state of Minnesota that have either passed a resolution indicating ARMR is their best radio communications option or are currently operating on the ARMR system. And while a previous testifier talked about the concerns of ARMR in greater Minnesota and how it might operate, I can assure you where it is operating in greater Minnesota right now, in Itasca County and some of the other greater Minnesota counties, Big Stone and Candy, Ohio, the system is far exceeding expectations of the local police, fire, EMS, and emergency managers. There are no questions really left in the minds of emergency responders as to how the ARMR system will operate. It is performing superbly. And Madam Chair, I hope I've clarified the comment Representative Hillstrom made, but the core funds were for building the ARMR system, not for local enhancements.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make it clear that Representative Paymar and I have consistently worked to allow the expanded use of that funds for these local grants, and the administration has not always been in favor of that. So I just wanted to throw that out there as we're looking at unpopular revenue sources all over the place. That is another one that we should just know is out there.
Can I just ask, but you know, I heard what you said, but if you're in charge of all those budgets and you can use this fee that Representative Hillstrom has laid out there for something else, I mean, you get the substitution effect that then you can have more spending freed up for something else, don't you? Well, I mean, isn't still net beneficiary benefit to you to use that fee?
Well, Madam Chair, we're really talking about two different things. And last year, the legislature authorized us to grant out $5 million to local units of government for offsetting the local infrastructure costs to migrate onto the ARMR system. That's on top of $9.5 million that was authorized in 2007 and $8 million that was authorized in 2005. That is for local infrastructure. The bills that you're hearing today are talking about sales tax exemptions. And if you were to take and try to offset the general fund loss by utilizing the 911 fund as suggested, that would absolutely destroy our bond rating and really probably dramatically impact our bond rating or even stop our ability to sell bonds. Because While I spent time here at the legislature and I never fully understood the bond thing, when I have my telephone interviews with the bond councils, I certainly understand it right now, which we do every single year. And the first question out of their mouth is, are funds from the 911 fund diverted for purposes other than the 911 purposes? And this would divert funds to the general fund and would dramatically impact our bond rating.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just don't think communities care whether we give them a grant to get the equipment or whether we give them a sales tax exemption, as long as they get the money. So while we're hearing this as a sales tax exemption today, that isn't necessarily the only way to get law enforcement the radios that they need to do this job. So that's all, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, please. Sure.
And, Madam Chair, the state has always, and the legislature has, tried to fill the gap between just local units of government doing the cheapest thing and migrating onto the armor system. And the reason for that is the armor system provides the highest level of interoperable communications of any radio system that's out there. And the sales tax exemption and the grants for the local infrastructure have been a means to try to bridge that gap. The state has never paid for portable and mobile radios, and the theory behind that it has been that we don't buy squad cars, fire trucks, guns, bullets, fire hoses, etc., that there are certain pieces of equipment that local unit government should be responsible for, and portable and mobile radios would be included in that group, which has really been the state policy for a long time. We do leverage federal grant dollars to allow them to get grants for portable and mobile equipment, but we've never used state dollars for those.
Okay, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a final statement. I just want everyone to know that I'm very supportive of this program, and I have worked very hard. I've carried the legislation to raise the fees. I have worked very, very hard on this program, and so I don't want you to think that I'm beating up on them. I just want you all to know that it's a revenue source. That's all.
And I think it's it's interesting to listen, because I know Representative Hillstrom has been an extremely strong advocate for all of this and for all the mechanisms of funding. So, Representative Torkelson, do you have further comments?
Well, I'd just bring us back to a focus on the fairness of the sales tax application issue, that there are 25 counties that have not paid sales tax on this equipment and continue to be free from paying sales tax on this equipment, and there are 62 counties that are in line to pay this sales tax, and to me that seems to be extremely unfair. I would also like to note that I do have representation here from the Sheriff's Association, from the Minnesota Chiefs of Police, from the League of Cities, and from the Association of Minnesota Counties, who all are in favor of making some kind of progress on curing this unfair situation.
Further discussion? Further, anyone else from the public would like to testify for or against this bill? I completely agree with you, Representative Torkelson and Representative Falk. I mean, it is completely unfair, and you know we have to think about this. And it stopped being, I think, being exempted because there was no money.
Madam Chair,
you know, I do. Before that, I just want to say, and I could be wrong on this, but I used to be on our Bloomington City Council, and before this got underway, even from the get-go, just so you know, Representative Torkelson, if we came up with a statewide system, you know, we would never do this, okay? But I and others like me could argue that in that whole new system where we bring everybody to parity, we need to refund all the cities who, before this ever started, put a whole bunch of money into this on the local property tax. Before the first county got ever exempted from the state sales tax, and cities like mine put in millions and millions of dollars on this and levied it on the property tax with no state assistance at all. And then these were one of the things when this got underway, a bunch of cities were caught sort of like up by leading. You know what happened is we paid for our own, and then now we're going to, you know, pay for everybody else's too. So I think when you look at all 87 counties and all the cities within them, there were some real leaders who were out front funding this stuff and not waiting for the state or anyone to get their act together or all the radio people to get together, and they just started doing it. And a true equitable system would account for that and refund that, but that doesn't happen around here. I just want you to know that if you're feeling that these guys out here got hurt, the early sort of adapters got hurt too as all this got underway. So it probably doesn't make you feel any better, but just want you to know that the city of Bloomington and levied a lot of money that
another
they
reminder that no
they paid
deed,
on the property tax.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, that's right. Last comment, we're going to adjourn then. Please.
Madam Chair, just quickly, and I appreciate your leadership on this issue and taking some time to talk about this. This is clearly in the top three of issues that are important to the emergency responders in the state of Minnesota. And I just want to try to address the question of why now. The Federal Communications Commission has required emergency response organizations operating in certain frequencies bands to narrow band, which means you have this much spectrum to use today, and by 2013 you have this much spectrum. And really across the United States of America, everybody who uses two-way radio communications is in the process of updating that communications equipment. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of costs to do this across the United States. If we look at history, Madam Chair, approximately 40 years ago was the last time the radio communications equipment in the state of Minnesota was updated. So this is kind of our one chance in 40 years to make sure that we try to get as many people on the shared system as possible, because that truly will be the highest level of interoperable communications. And my final comment, Madam Chair, members, is that Representative Marquardt was talking earlier about collaboration and expanding that collaboration. This system and the people that support it through governance structure, our city, county, state, federal, tribal, non-governmental organizations, and others all have come together to try to make this a reality.
Okay, and thank you for your comments, Representative Hillstrom. I know was tireless on this. Representative Torkelson, final comment. We're going to adjourn.
Just a quick comment. As Scott mentioned, 2013. It's actually January 1st of 2013. So we have till the end of 2012 to get this done. And just thank you again for accommodating my desire to be here.
We appreciate folks who were able to stay till the end. We're adjourned. Thank you.